Hi guys, and welcome to episode 39 of You Podcast. And just a small message, it was a massive episode. We had a filmy girl on it and we talked for 2 hours, so I had to split up the file in two. This is part one. There's a part two that is going to be only about Bollywood. In part two, we'll be talking about reviewing all the recent releases like Bodyguard, Mere Brother Ki Dulhan, Mausam and Force, and all the upcoming releases for the next year, for the upcoming year, like Desi Boys. I know that's a Filmy Girl's favorite movie that she's looking forward to. And we'll be also talking about Dawn versus Ravan. And me and Filmy Girl finally lay our cards on the table and talk about the SRK Shah Rukh Khan issue. Which side do we stand on? You can finally hear it all on You Podcast. So that's all in part two, but let's start with part one, where the main review is Drive, and I hope you guys enjoy the show, and I'll catch you guys after. Depending on if we can get Ahmed online or not, we'll be talking about different stuff in this episode. But we've got our special guest with us, Kara Filmy Girl. Welcome, Kara.
Hi, I'm here.
Hi, Kara. It's been ages, so really happy to have you back.
Thank you.
And Ahmed couldn't make it, but Marty's here. Hey, Marty.
Hey, Asim. How's it going?
It's going awesome, man. Except I don't know if you read my tweet, but I dropped a 35-kilo dumbbell on my iPhone today.
I'm imagining the iPhone didn't win that one.
No, but man, it's sturdy, man. It's still working, but it just looks horrible. But I think the spirit of Steve Jobs was really strong in this one, in my iPhone, because they kind of passed away at the same time.
So are you going to get the new Jesus phone?
I think so, man. I mean, I think the timing, this, like, the cosmos is telling me that the timing is right, that I should get an upgrade now.
I'm doing an analysis on the cost plan versus handset purchase price.
Oh.
And I'll send you a table.
Maybe even post it on your podcast, man. A lot of people are probably interested in that calculation.
Can tell you the most efficient model to go for,
exactly.
Basically.
Okay, so
I am that sad. Sorry.
So okay, this episode we'll be talking about our main review is going to be Drive, the Ryan Gosling movie directed by Nicholas Winding Refn. We're going to be talking about Red State, Kevin Smith's latest movie. We'll be catching up some on the latest releases of Bollywood with Kara. And Marty has Marty, what is this? The Faded Unclassified? Can you just explain it quickly?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the thing that popped up on my radar recently on Twitter, the TV channel Adult Swim, which I guess shares network space with the Cartoon Network, but in the evenings and that. Late at night, they put together for reasons unbeknownst to me. They worked with Scion Records and they have produced a compilation album called Unclassified, which you can download from thefader.com. It's I guess, I mean, they're calling it an 18-track compilation of rare and unreleased, mostly UK. Future music. I wouldn't necessarily call it future music, but it's, I guess, a lot of it's at the sort of cutting edge of underground and sort of bass and urban music. Yeah, I think it's absolutely fantastic. You got some brilliant tracks on there. Just a couple of examples, I guess, I'll give you. Street Halo by Burial, who was nominated for the Mercury Music Prize in the UK a few years ago. Someone else, you got Starkey, you got Iconica, Code 9. So you got a lot of sort of heavy hitters, really, I guess, from the underground and bass music side of things in the UK. So it's absolutely brilliant to have as a free download.
So that's on the fader.com, and you got in touch, I mean, you got to know them because they're in Archer, the animated show that you'll be talking about a bit later on too, right?
Yeah, I mean, Archer, I think that comes out of, or it's screened on Adult Swim, or it certainly used to be.
Yeah, I think Kara would know better. We don't even know what Adult Swim is, really, do we? Europe.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really watch TV on TV, so. Okay. I think it's Share Space with Cartoon Network, though. I think that's right.
Okay.
Although I do want to watch, they have a new one that's like a rip-off, or not a rip-off, like a takeoff on like the CSI, like Special Victims Unit kind of shows.
Oh, I want to see that one. right? I want to check that one out too.
And one of my favorites, Martin Starr from Freaks and Geeks and Party Down.
Oh, he's in that too?
Yes.
Oh, nice.
And
I didn't know that.
Captain Janeway from Star Trek Voyager, so it's really like an all-star cast.
Well, then I definitely need to watch it. I was going to... I mean, there's always... And we're going to also be reviewing Homeland later on, and The Good Wife, by the way, just to throw that in. But just kind of a general thing, like I have some shows that I wait for the season to be done, and then I catch up in one go, or some I just have to watch it episode by episode. And I think that one, I don't know the exact name, it's NSCDV. It's got a very long acronym name, right?
With SUV at the end, I think.
Yeah. So that's probably going to be one of those shows that I catch up when it's done. So, but you're saying it's good.
I'm saying I want to see it. I haven't seen it yet. Okay. Yeah, but it's the same. It is on Cartoon Network, I think.
Okay, cool. Okay, so let's get started.
Nice.
Sounds good.
Okay, let's do that then. Okay, Marty, so you start first. You saw a pretty awesome movie this time, right? So you saw Red State, Kevin Smith's latest movie, and I think it's probably his second to last movie, actually. I mean, I'm a huge, just, I know that it's you kind of stumbled into Red State, but I'm a huge Kevin Smith fan. I usually listen to his podcast. I even have him on Twitter, which is kind of insane because he's like a motor mouth on Twitter. He just keeps tweeting and keeps tweeting. So, I mean, this had a whole hoopla when it got released. Maybe I'll talk about that a bit later, but what did you think of Red State?
The reason I came to Red State actually is I was in the cinema for the second time watching Drive, and there was a trailer for Red State, and I thought, oh, that looks like a shitload of fun. So I thought I'd better go around to watching it, and it's something I don't normally do particularly with Kevin Smith, because I think I'm sort of unwittingly a fan of his movies, but I think I've only really seen three Kevin Smith films. I might have seen more, but I just am blissfully unaware of that fact. I like the fact that it seems to be initially just sort of poking fun at gun-toting religious nut jobs, which is always has potential to be entertaining. So yeah, I thought it was really good. It's quite short as well, which I quite like. I think it starts off, it's all quite jokey, then it gets a little bit more serious, then a little bit more jokey, then a little bit more serious.
Yeah.
I thought it was really good. So it was good to see John Goodman in the film again.
Yeah, the cast is amazing in this movie. It's not only John Goodman. I mean, there's even Melissa Leo, who I think she won an Oscar last year, didn't she, for the boxing movie she was in?
Yeah, she did.
The Fighter, obviously. Yeah. I love The Fighter, yeah. And Carrie Bish from Scrubs, the last season of Scrubs. I don't know if you guys watched that, but she was pretty funny. But the performance in this movie really is Michael Parks, right? The Aben Cooper.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I hope he gets like some nomination or something like that. I know that, Kara, you wrote a rant not too long ago about Oscars not being the...
Right.
You know what I mean?
Wait, I wrote a rant?
Oh.
That doesn't sound like me.
What was your point? I mean, Marty hasn't followed it, probably.
Yeah, okay, well, so, you know, because I follow all the Indian press about movies and stuff, and they have this collective hard-on for the Oscars, and they think that the Oscars is like this, you know, massively artistic thing, and it's a huge, I mean, it is an honor, but I don't know, like, I don't, like, the Oscars don't necessarily reward objectively the best performance and objectively the best anything. I mean, it's you know, a combination of popularity contest and the winners. I mean, it's not something that says that this is your best work ever and you were the best at this year. I mean, it is an honor, but it's not like an objective honor. Yeah. But anyway, like, the Indian press always gets really worked up about which movie is going to be sent over for the foreign Oscar. And they always pick these, like, ridiculously artsy ones
yeah.
that no middle-brow American person is going to vote for because it's just either way over their heads or it doesn't confirm any of their stereotypes. And I don't know. That was my rant.
Yeah. I think Lagan was the only one that ever had made a chance from anyone that's been sent over in the last
year. Yeah, because it confirmed everyone's stereotypes and it was good.
Yeah, it was really
so, good. Yeah.
But are you a Kevin Smith fan, Kara?
I am, to an extent. I mean, I'm not, like, a huge fan, but I like his movies.
Yeah.
Although this one, I was kind of worried, though, because it just seemed like one of those sort of South-baiting movies where everyone from, like, Appalachia is a mouth-breathing idiot who, like, goes to a snake-handling church and drinks moonshine in the backyard with
yeah.
overalls on. I don't know. Like, I have a lot of friends from, like, Tennessee and Kentucky, and
yeah.
those kinds of films can be a little insulting sometimes. So I don't know. I mean, I guess coming from outside the U.S., you would have a different perspective on it.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of think the entire States is like that, not just...
Hey!
No, I'm joking.
as I take a swig of my moonshine... Hitch up my overalls.
No, but actually the movie is not like that, and it's really good, I think. Even although I'm a Kevin Smith fan, but I mean, this movie, I don't know. I mean, I know Marty has the innocence of a newborn baby, so he doesn't really know what's going on that much in film world and geek world. But Kevin Smith made this whole hoopla about he shot this movie with his own budget, with his own money, and this is a plan he had from, I think he's had this movie in the back for 10, 15 years or something like that. He's been always talking about it a little bit, and it was such a dark horror comedy kind of thing that it's very different from his genre. And I think after making Cop Out, which was a completely studio movie, he wanted to kind of get back to his roots and kind of make a movie that was really personal. So he made this announcement that in Sundance last year, he was going to auction the movie. So at the first screening, they had all these studio heads there, and everybody, like the buyers, were there, and they were going to buy up the movie if it was any good. So after the movie, Kevin Smith comes out on stage, and then he sells the movie to himself for $20. And that just, people, like, the geek world just started hating on Kevin Smith. Like, how can you do that? And how can you waste people's time? And you lied and this and that and all this kind of bullshit that didn't make any sense to me.
It's nerds. It never makes sense.
Exactly, yeah. They just get pissed off about stuff like that, you know. Like there's a few blogs out there that don't want to talk about Kevin Smith at all, that are not going to give him a review of his movie anymore, because he doesn't care about reviews, because he feels he's making movies for his own audience anyway. And if people can kind of... he can add to that audience, great, but he doesn't want to have, like, critics criticizing his movies, because he's been doing it for 15, 20 years now, and he's never got, like, good reviews and whatnot, you know, or made enough money out of it. So he feels it doesn't matter. I guess that's how much I understand what he's trying to say.
Yeah, I think that's a legitimate thing, though. I mean, a lot of these fanboys... Well, because I sent you the link, right, to that rant about the scripts and Anurag Kashyap.
Yeah,
it's that same ideology. They just, like, criticize everything because it's not perfect and original and meeting their, you know, arbitrary criteria for something that's good.
Yeah, it's a weird mix of people that want, like, I don't know what they want, actually. If it was a movie that they would make, but they would never make a movie, that kind of thing. It's kind of a weird...
Right.
A movie should be this, but I'll never make a movie, so I'll just talk about other people's movies. It's a weird thing, and they don't want to be entertained. They watch, like, 500 movies a year, so they're completely jaded, and that's why I don't connect with these kind of films.
No, I don't either, and it's like, if it's not fun... Why are you doing it? Like, why are you wasting your time
exactly.
watching Kevin Smith movies and then trashing them?
Yeah.
Like, how is that possibly worthwhile?
It's, We can just sum it all up as it's just hypocrisy, isn't it?
It's the hypocrisy of our democracy.
That's what it is.
So, I mean, in Red State, the story is about, like, three kids that they want to have, like, a threesome with somebody, and they find a woman on the net. When they get to her for that threesome, they get abducted by this, I think it's a cult of some kind or a sect, and I think it plays a bit with the Westboro Baptist Church, but they do kind of say explicitly that it's not the Westboro Baptist Church. So it's a bit more hardcore, and they are going to kind of sacrifice these kids. But then the government steps in, and then becomes kind of a Waco situation. And it's funny because it's not only criticizing these cults, but it's also criticizing the government and their reaction to these kind of things. So
exactly, yeah, and it also frames that in a post Patriot Act, post 9/11 sense, because everything is about homeland security. So all they're saying is the way to solve this is we just wipe everybody out and leave no trace.
Which
that obviously has certain moral dilemmas presented because of that.
And Kevin Smith is somebody with a religious background. He believes, you know, I mean, anybody that's seen Dogma has to understand that he has religion has a special place for him, you know. So he's not going to be, like, completely anti-religion or, you know, even though the Westboro Baptist Church were, like, harassing him on Twitter and stuff like that when the movie came out, they've been a lot more quieter now because they probably have something else that they want to rail against. But the movie is great. It has enough points to say. I mean, it has something to say as a movie, which already is something interesting. It's really well shot. There's pretty awesome action in it, and the performance, especially Michael Parks, it's amazing. So, I mean, if that's enough reason for you to want to watch Red State, I would strongly recommend it. I don't know about you, Marty.
I would definitely recommend it. I agree with you. I think it's just kind of nice to watch a film that has something to say. And that has a point that it, you know, wants to make, or it wants to get people thinking about it, whatever.
Yeah.
And that, you know, there were some other actors, you know, plenty of actors in there that had small parts, but who you recognize. One of the FBI agents who gets shot. One of the guys in the end was in, I think, the first or second season of Mad Men. It's nicely done. It's quite lightly done, I think. I don't think anything is, I mean, it's a Kevin Smith movie, so I guess nothing is going to be sort of particularly heavily dealt with, or, you know, but
I think he breaks the mold of being a Kevin Smith movie. He does really
well,
do something different.
He's not
but
the
in,
most
in
subtle
the sense of
thinkers.
Exactly.
It's not sort of, things aren't intellectualized to a certain point that you're sort of, oh, bloody hell, like it's not like you're sat there watching a Tarkovsky, you know, an Andrei Tarkovsky film about the existence of humankind,
yeah,
you know.
But then again, it's not a Brett Ratner movie either, you know. You know, it's I mean, it has more to say than something like Brett Ratner does, you know. So I mean, I would give him credit at least, you know. But no, for me it's a good movie, so I would definitely recommend it. And I think it's even out on VOD, so you can watch it through Netflix in the States, and iTunes is carrying it now. So it's good, and he's self-financed it. It's an independent movie, and I think, you know, like, it's always just good to kind of support these kind of movies, and it might be one of his last. I think he's doing one more after this, which is going to be a two-parter, Hit Somebody. This is probably going to be one of his last movies. He's going to be doing a lot of other stuff, but yeah, movie directing wise he's probably quitting. And that was also an announcement he made at Sundance. Red State, I liked Red State. Has anybody of you seen No Country for Old Men?
No. I want to, though.
You haven't? Oh, yeah, okay.
No, it's on my list, but
yeah, it's a long list.
It is a long list. And it keeps getting longer.
I wonder why. Have you watched?
I have. Loved it.
Oh, okay. Because
I think that's a brilliant film.
Because there's a lot. I mean, there's a big parallel between that and Red State in a way, the way the structure of the movie is and stuff like that, which is interesting. But maybe you can talk that later on when we're full spoiler section. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. And what else were you watching, Marty?
Since the last podcast, I have been definitely catching up with the new season of Archer.
which is
just truly brilliant. And the link that I had in my brain actually earlier between Adult Swim and Archer, it's actually the creator of Archer is a guy called Adam Reed. And he is very connected to Adult Swim, even though Archer's actually on the FX network in the end. But the Archer is it's brilliant. End of season two, I just couldn't wait for season three to start, and they kicked off with a back-to-back three-parter. Whereby our hero Archer gets abducted and becomes a pirate king. which is a novel plot device, but yeah, it's just fantastic. I guess it sort of spoofs James Bond and OSS 117 and Man from U.N.C.L.E. a little bit, and it's a little bit it's a bit anachronistic, or it's a bit sort of like time ambiguous, in the sense of it's obviously set in a contemporary, it's like set now basically, but everything sort of looks old, so 50s, cars yeah. don't really look modern. Everything has that kind of like 50s vibe to it, but even like computers, they make computers look like they're computers from the 1980s.
They all look like the bad computer.
Yeah, it's really strange. So there's this odd sort of mix of the sort of like how it looks and how it feels, with sort of like how it's written and what the characters sort of have to say in terms of their dialogue and everything. But it's just hilarious. Archer's absolutely pant-wettingly funny.
Have you been catching up, Kara, with the season of Archer, or not really?
No, I haven't. I've been, yeah. Sorry, I've been behind.
It's on the list, though. It's on the list.
It is. It's on my list. It's on my very long list.
Because, I mean, you're a huge John Benjamin fan, and we've been talking about it, and you recommended me watch that other show he was on,
Dr. Katz. Did you watch it?
No, Dr. Katz I watched back in the day already when it came out. John Benjamin has a van.
Bob's
Burgers.
Yeah.
The other one.
Yeah, John Benjamin Has a Van. I actually started watching it, but you know that show is getting cancelled, right? There's no way they can continue that show.
Really bizarre.
I love John Benjamin.
It's just that voice, but you need to rein it in, man. It's a bit... Like, you recommended that I watch that, so I checked it out. I watched like 3-4 episodes, and I made Ahmed and Marty watch it afterwards. And they just could not figure out is it supposed to be funny? Is it just weird?
Is it created? Is it a documentary with a spoof like dialogue? It talks about and shows you such strange things.
Man, he had this piece.
Bizarre.
He had this episode where he was going to Little Italy. So it was just absurd, man. It was like, you know, Little Italy, you know, like the Italian neighborhood and like American cities and whatnot. But it had Little Italy. So they were like all like 3 inches tall, and then he was having sex with one Italian woman that was 3 inches tall, and you could see everything in sheets going up and down. It was just absurd, man. It was absurd. But yeah, John Benjamin is crazy. That's the only thing I can say. But yeah, Archer has been... I've been happy that it's been back, although maybe I'm not... I mean, I really liked the first episode of the three-parter, but I felt it was kind of getting worse and worse the longer that they dragged it on. So actually, I don't even think I've seen... No, I saw the third episode too, actually. Yeah, I did. But yeah, it kind of felt forgettable, so I hope they kind of get back to the normal craziness that they get into.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, so yeah, that's Archer, and yeah, I think it's on FX in the States, right? Or... Even FX here in the UK, they even show it on FX, I think.
Yeah, they should do, and then normally a bit further down the line, it'll come out on one of the either like 5-star or 5 USA or something in the UK.
Yeah. And it's kind of the show that you can kind of even buy it on DVD and stuff. Like, it's kind of a keeper, you know?
Yeah. No, it definitely. I just think I love it. I really do love it.
Okay, cool. Maybe Kara, we do Homeland first, and then we move over to my stuff, and then we do Drive, I think, and then we can do Bollywood after that. I think that'll be more.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
So, Kara, you wanted to talk about a show that you caught up with today, right?
Yes, I saw the first episode of Homeland, which is with Claire Danes, and I didn't recognize anybody else. Although I think is that other woman from Firefly? Is that that's
yes,
not Marina?
She is. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know how to pronounce
Morena
her last name.
Baccarin.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Or like that. Yeah, I thought it was interesting. For one thing, I'm not sure where they shot it, but definitely some of it was set or shot in D.C., which is always nice because nothing annoys me more than seeing D.C., but it's really California and very obviously California.
Or Canada.
Which I think this was probably shot in Vancouver, but...
Okay.
Yeah, but... Vancouver looks a lot more like D.C. than California does.
Okay.
So anyway, yeah, where Claire Danes plays a CIA agent, and she, like, it opens in Iraq, and she gets, like, a piece of intelligence from a man who's about to be executed. And, yeah, like, we don't know, it's only the first episode, so, like, there's been hints that she's crazy and sort of following this lead off into La La Land, or maybe the bit of intelligence was right and she's like following her hunch to something like major that she's gonna prevent from happening, so we don't know yet.
Right. So it's it's this parallel story with a soldier that's coming back after being held in captivity for quite a long time, I think, right?
Eight years,
yeah. So,
yeah.
And I don't think it's spoilery, but I think he might be a double agent for some nefarious Muslim organization.
Well, that's what she thinks.
Yeah, but so that guy is played by Damian Lewis, who's one of those that guys, you know? You've seen his face in so many things, but you don't know where he's where you know him from.
Yeah, what has he been in?
I'm looking at his list now, and I saw him in Your Highness. He was in that.
Oh, was he? I wanted to see that.
Yeah, it was hilarious.
It's on my list.
No, that was good. But also, he was in Dreamcatcher. I never saw that movie, but I remember the ads really clearly. So, and he's a British actor actually. So, which is funny again.
Oh well, he did a very good American accent.
Oh really? Oh, that's good. That's good. That's probably also annoying, right? When so many British actors... Although
I don't think it's annoying.
I think British actors do a convincing American accent, but the other way around just...
No. The other way around makes me want to shoot myself in the head. The other way around is terrible. Wait, did you see the ads for Anne Hathaway in whatever that movie was?
One Day? Yeah.
Oh, that was embarrassingly bad. I felt sorry for her seeing that.
Although she was doing like more of a northern accent, she wasn't doing like England. I saw the movie actually. It wasn't that bad.
Really?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm a married man, so I need to sometimes take my wife to these dating movies, and I've seen such horrible movies. That one was kind of okay. I even it got a bit dusty in the cinema, even a few scenes. But those who have read the movie know what I'm talking about. Read the book, know what I'm talking about. But yeah, it was actually not bad. But then again, I really like Anne Hathaway, so
yeah, I like her too.
But I'm always thinking of Don Cheadle in Oceans. You know, that's my go-to American.
Oh no, that's disgusting.
But yeah, Homeland is it's kind of interesting because I know Marty, you didn't get a chance to watch it, but it's on Showtime. So I mean, being in Europe, we don't know these channels that way like you guys do. But I know Showtime, HBO, and now even AMC. These are the kind of shows you know that if they're producing it, at least it's worth the watch.
I would say the pilot or this first episode is definitely worth watching. And although I didn't know it was by the makers of 24, so I didn't like the first episode. It didn't seem terribly racist to me, but then again, you know, I'm white and not Muslim or Arabic. So, yeah, I don't know. It could lead into some terrible stuff later on, or it could not.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Well, it's the makers of 24, so I'm pretty much guaranteeing they'll end up being like end up getting a bit racist in season 7 or whatever. But no, I think it makes sense like that. It's from the creator of 27. It has that same kind of look. I feel it's connected with that. But I really enjoyed the first episode too, and it's just, you know, like. It's difficult for me in a way, because I feel these kind of episodes or these kind of shows, it made me think of Born on the 4th of July in a way. You know, it's like America, this really horrible thing happened, and it's been going on for so long, and now you're trying to come to terms with it, you know? And this show is more about, like, an internal threat of what happened, you know, what, you know, like the repercussions of all of the war and this and that, and now the terrorists kind of coming back to the States. So I think it's kind of, it has that same vibe of the States trying to come to terms with what has happened in the last 10-15 years.
Yeah, but I wonder, even, I mean, just living here, I mean, it just feels like nobody cares anymore, so I wonder even how the show will do if people still care about Iraq. I mean, there was some interesting, like, dialogues early in the episode where they're talking, you know, oh, we don't, she wanted something done, and she calls her boss, and he's like, you know, we can't make things happen in Iraq anymore, like, we're out.
Yeah.
And I don't know, and the soldier, the POW coming back, it's just, this stuff is really off the news here. You know, so it's just kind of interesting that this show is coming out now, but maybe this show is coming out now because nobody cares anymore, so there's not as much attention being paid.
I think you need a bit of space between the events happening, and, you know, because, like, even, like, Hurt Locker and all of these Iraq movies that came out, they weren't really successful or anything like that, you know?
So, or Generation Kill, did you see that?
No, I missed it, although
that was amazing. That was on, I own those DVDs.
That's
was
on
amazing.
My list. That's on my list. No, because especially was the guys that made The Wire, so it was definitely something I wanted to watch.
What kills me is Generation Kill lost to, like, some Charles Dickens thing in at the Emmys.
Oh.
Like, Generation Kill lost, like, best miniseries to some, like, stupid, you know, Charles Dickens thing. Like, a period piece.
Okay. But, again, Emmys, it's like the Oscars, I don't...
It is. It doesn't mean anything, but it's just kind of just shows you that it doesn't really mean anything.
But that was a one-season show, right? Or did it come
out? It's only, like, 6 episodes.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's worth watching.
I think I started watching it, but because all of the soldiers look exactly the same, they're all shaved.
Okay.
I couldn't really pick out who was who, but it was...
It's just a bunch of white guys. Like, they all look alike.
If they don't have hair, I can't pick them apart.
Well, one was really tall, and one was short.
But anyway, Homeland is on Showtime in the States, and the pilot looks really good, and I'm probably going to be watching it. I don't know if I'm going to be watching it, like, every episode, but I'll definitely keep my eye open for it.
What, yeah, me
you?
Too.
Yeah, you too? Okay.
Mm.
So let's move on to... was there anything else, Kari, you want to talk about? We're going to do the Bollywood a bit later on, yeah?
Yeah, although, did you want to just briefly touch on the new season of The Good Wife?
Oh, yeah, The Good Wife. Yeah. Let's talk about that. Kalinda. I just call that show Kalinda, man.
Kalinda. I call that show Kalinda.
Kalinda.
I think everybody calls that show Kalinda.
Marty, do you watch The Good Wife? You haven't... I mean, I think me and Ahmed were really pushing you to start watching it, but I'm guessing you haven't done that yet, have you?
No, because I have a peculiar fixation with Burn Notice, so I've been catching up on Burn Notice instead of watching something, I guess, mildly good.
Yeah. I mean, like,
I actually don't know anything about it, but I know that you've been talking about it for a long time. So
it's a tough sell, because nothing about The Good Wife would say that this is, like, a must-watch show or it's really good, because it just seems like a legal drama, like there's a diamond dozen, you know? You know what I mean, Kara? I mean...
Yeah, but it's so much smarter than your typical legal dramas. And I actually... It combines a lot of things that I really like, which is... I do actually like the episodic, you know, sort of story of the week that they do.
Yeah.
Like, a case a week, because the cases are smart, they're interesting, they're usually smart, but they bring up things that are happening sort of in the news. Like, they did one based on the Amanda Knox thing last season. Yeah, so it's, I mean, it's, and it's always interesting. Like, the, oh, they did one, like, a death penalty case that was kind of like, yeah, well, they've done like any number of death penalty cases. I mean, yeah, and the cast is amazing.
Yeah.
And they get all these people from, like, The Wire show up, which is always nice.
Yeah, and even, I mean, like, what you're mentioning about the cases is really true, because they even had, like, an episode about Napster. They had one, you know, it's,
yep,
it's like, really current things that, and then the overarching story is really, it's really engrossing, too. I know our buddy Ahmed is, like, a freak of episodic shows. You need to, like, tie me down to watch one. But this one has that good balance, that the overarching story, every episode it kind of progresses, something happens in that overarching story, and then the individual episodes are really interesting, because they're, they've got some great guest stars, like you mentioned, and the story is always relatable. It's something new. So I really enjoy the Good Wife, and I'm really happy that it's back. But what did you think of the? Because I think it's the third episode has just been out, right? I think.
Or the third episode
of the
starts tonight, or the third season just started. But I've only seen the first two episodes, but I really like the direction they're going in. Because at the end of last season, there was some tension between Kalinda and
Alicia.
Yeah, Alicia. shows you where my focus is. And I didn't like I don't like when shows have like that chick fighting, like the infighting over some dude, which just really annoys me.
Yeah.
So I think they're kind of healing that and going in a great direction.
Yeah.
So
I think it's really interesting, because The Good Wife, I like it for two reasons, and I've brought up The Good Wife whenever I'm talking about other shows, why they're so bad, like Franklin and Bash, a show that I've started to hate now. I that's a legal drama that's going on now. It's episodic, and when you compare that to Good Wife, this is so much better. Plus, they don't, I mean, and then I compare also Good Wife to as a positive example of an Indian person that has like an awesome role on American television, which to me never ever happens.
There's her, and then there's Aziz Ansari, who
Parks and Recreation.
Parks and Rec, and then there's this amazing actress, Dilshad. I forget her last name, but she was on Greek. Did you ever watch that? It was on ABC Family.
No, I never watched.
And she was actually cast in a part. The name of her character, Rebecca Logan.
Mm.
Like, she came in to read for something else, and they're like, we like you for this role. Mm. And she was cast totally race blind for that, a part that could have gone, you know, to like a some blonde. Mm. But she, I think, is now in Zooey Deschanel's new show.
Oh, is she?
Yeah.
Oh, which I also really enjoy. A New Girl.
Really?
It's really good. But I know I'll never get you to watch anything with Zooey Deschanel.
No, that's like, that's a dude show. I liked Two Broke Girls. I thought that was pretty good.
I need to catch up with that. But the thing with Archie Punjabi, and comparing to Aziz Ansari, was I think he's from an Indian or Pakistani background. I'm not 100% sure, but he doesn't portray himself as being, you know, kind of a Russell Peters kind of thing. But whereas Archie Punjabi, she is from London, man. You know, like she. Oh, I mean, she's from England. She's from. She was in Bend It Like Beckham, and she's been doing tons of work. And again, awesome American accent. You wouldn't even think that she's not American. And she,
well, I read an interview with her where they told her initially she had been doing a real American accent, and they told her no, make it a little more ambiguous.
Oh, okay.
So she does that, like, on purpose.
Wow. But it kind of suits the role that she's playing. That
it does,
you don't know where she's from, you don't know her background, you don't even know her accent. So she's she's pretty amazing in it. And, she eclipses everybody in that role.
She does. Well, her and Josh Charles.
Yeah.
I love him.
Yeah. He's really good, too.
Baltimore boy.
I hope there's a Kalinda spin-off or something like that after The Good Wife.
and I hope they don't make her straight. That's the other thing.
No,
it's kind of worrying.
You think? I think even in the last episode, they were kind of like showing the ambiguity.
Yeah.
You don't know anything about her, not even her.
It's just like there's so few like Indian faces. There's just very few gay characters,
Yeah,
so
yeah.
it would be a shame.
And again, if you compare it to the show Franklin and Bash or even Outsource, I mean that as a I'm offended every time I see those shows as a like somebody from a South Asian background. And it's also funny because in the UK we don't have that kind of stereotype anymore. I think because like in America they're really played like nerds. I don't think we have that same background here in the UK. I mean, I don't remember. Marty, do you know any like picturizations of Southeast Asians in UK as nerds? Not really, right?
Are you telling me you're not a doctor?
I'm not a doctor or a liar or an engineer.
No, that would be the normal. That would be the normal one. Is that you know just Indians just send their family to do medicine?
Yeah,
I think that's a. But I mean, it's not like that's portrayed really in dramas or on TV or not so much. I mean, I think. What's that film? East meets
East
West
is
or something?
East is
East or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
I think that sort of it talks about that notion of the stereotyping. I think because it's more about the expectation of the parents who are obviously that first generation, and the expectation that they have that you know they want their children to be lawyer, be accountant, be doctor. But I don't think that's actually reflected very much.
Yeah, but I just
in general in this country.
I don't think they also like play nerds or anything like that. I think in the States, every time I see an Indian character, he's playing like he's never going to be a hero, you know. Like it's always going to be like Kalinda is a hero in my eyes, you know. And I don't think there's many other characters that are that heroic that are coming from an Indian background. At least not in American shows.
Well, to be fair, American shows are pretty terrible for everyone if you're not white.
Yeah.
Or a guy. If you're a white guy, you got a lot of people to look up to, but
being a white guy must be awesome. Marty, how does it feel being a white guy?
Yeah, how does it feel being a white guy?
awesome. Honestly, it's yeah.
Okay. Enough of the white guy. Moving on, let's just talk quickly about what I've been watching. I've had the whole superhero thing. You know, this year was just about superheroes everywhere. You know, like we had Thor, we had Captain America, we had you know tons of them. So I was kind of still in my superhero mode. So I watched two things. One was a movie called Super, directed by James Gunn. Starring Rainn Wilson, Ellen Page, and Liv Tyler, in a tiny role, and Kevin Bacon was in it. And then I also saw a documentary called The Superheroes. And I think both of these things played with the idea that Kick-Ass kind of started, is what would happen if heroes were real. But whereas Kick-Ass it turned into a comic book after a while, right? But both of these things kind of kept it real. Like, really, what would happen if somebody would get on put on a superhero costume and start roaming the streets? So it was really interesting. And the thing that would happen if somebody would do that, it would be really, really sad. So they have these homemade costumes that they kind of, especially in the documentary, they followed all these guys in the States that are roaming the streets as superheroes. I think there was a clique in Washington, there was somebody in New York, and they had all these mock costumes on, and they had like they were called the Extraordinary League of Superheroes and the Justice League of America. It was really sad, man. It was, they were following these people for like a couple of nights and what they kind of do and how they kind of try to help people. And they do have these good intentions, but, it's just really, really sad. They're very lonely and they kind of try to find an identity by being superheroes, but the only thing that they really do is like stop people parking in the wrong spot or stuff like that. It's a good documentary, but it's really sad and it's kind of heartbreaking. And I was wondering, why does this kind of stuff only happen in America? You know what I mean? I would not see that happening in London.
Oh no, but there's been a guy in Yeovil, which is a small town in the southwest of England, and they've had a guy who's a ninja. He's been I'm gonna find the story. Hold on. And yeah, he's just been sort of like patrolling the streets, I think.
Well, it's just a fraying of our social fabric more than anything else, I think.
Explain.
You know, people. People don't have communities anymore. You don't have your neighborhood. You don't have a church that you go to. You don't have. I mean, a lot of times people live away from their families and extended families, and they get lonely. And when you have pop culture, and that's all you have.
Yeah, it's
that's when you end up with, like, the I saw a girl the other day on this, you know, walking around dressed like, doing the cosplay, like dressed like a Japanese schoolgirl.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's just the same kind of, or people that wear their Star Trek uniforms around. I don't know, it's like you replace everyday connections with things that you've taken from pop culture, and that's what happens.
Yeah, but I feel like it always is like one step further in the States. Like, cosplay is very popular in Japan too, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but they have a much stronger social fabric.
Yeah.
Like, you belong.
Yeah.
I mean, and so for there, it's more just like a release from tension. But here, I think it is just a people wanting to reach out and just don't know how to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm seeing the image of the Yuville Ninja. It's on BBC.com. I think you can search for it. But the guy has a knife and all, and he's patrolling the streets like a proper ninja.
Seems kind of dangerous.
He's actually a father of two. So yeah, and he's been doing it for the past 6 years. Can you imagine? But anyway, so yeah, that was this documentary called Superheroes. I saw it on my new Apple TV, which has this awesome functions to watch documentaries on it. So it's really cool. So check that out. And
what were you watching that on, Asim? Was that your Apple TV?
Yeah, Apple TV. Yeah.
Wait, but how was Super? Because I actually really like James Gunn. Slither was, I think, quite underrated.
Yeah, I haven't seen Slither, but I heard lots about
it. It's good.
Yeah, it's
And that's Nathan Fillion.
Oh,
who's,
is it?
Yeah, he's really good in everything. He's just got a very winning on-screen persona. But James Gunn has got a brother, Sean Gunn, who's one of those, oh, it's that guy. And he shows up in his Twitter feed is pretty hilarious. I think he tweets about his cat a lot.
Okay. So he has a connect with you straight away.
Exactly.
So, yeah, no. Super was good, but it was kind of, I mean, if I, you know, I don't score movies, but this one would really, I mean, if I give it a 6.5, that gives you a good idea about, I mean, it had good elements. It had a good premise, but it wasn't great. So I think that's what I would kind of give Super. It has,
like a one-time watch.
Exactly. It's a good one-time watch. Ellen Page is hilarious in it, more than anybody. I think Ellen Page is really good. It's a very low-budget kind of indie movie. I don't think people that know Rainn Wilson from The Office should watch it for him to... I mean, if you're going in watching him play Dwight, I wouldn't do that because it's a very different character, and it has a lot of gore in it even, which was kind of surprising, and I didn't see that coming.
If you saw Slither, you would have seen it coming.
Yeah, because I hadn't seen it, but it really goes a step further on that premise for what would happen if you would don a superhero costume and go out in the street. Well, you would get beat up really badly and get hurt really badly. But it has the ending is kind of sweet too, and it kind of it's kind of bittersweet at the end. But I would it's a definite deal if you are interested in the superhero genre in a way. If you like that premise, what would happen with the heroes, and you're not scared of a bit of gore. I think it's definitely a good one-time watch. And again, Nathan Fillion is in this too, so...
Oh, is he? Oh,
yeah,
good.
It's a small cameo, but he is in there. So yeah, that's James Gunn Super. Okay, so let's move on to our main review of the episode, which is Drive.
And speaking of gore...
Oh God, it's quite funny, because when I saw this film the first time...
Yeah.
It was at a... it was on the Monday of the week that it came out on the Friday, I think, and I saw it at the BFI, so I saw it at the British Film Institute. So I guess that having seen it then in a public cinema, not that the BFI isn't public, but I realised that by the time I saw it the second time, it obviously come out. People had read reviews, whatever, picked up on certain things that were being said about the film, and I think that the audience that I watched it as part of on the first go, because I suspect that they're a little bit more used to going to seeing different sort of movies, and maybe they had just knew more about the director's films and other things, but there were more people giggling in the screening I saw first, and basically nobody really giggled in the second screening, and nobody was shocked in the first screening, but people, like, I could hear the two women in front of me, I could hear them gasping when something crazy was going on in this film. So it was really? Quite interesting, actually.
Huh, yeah. That is kind of interesting. The audience really can make or break a film, I think, sometimes. Like, your experience watching it. Like, it can really add to it, or it can make it terrible. Like, the time I saw Black Swan, and the guy behind me insisted on explaining everything that was happening to his girlfriend in order to impress her, which was the worst experience ever. I mean, if you can just imagine some, like, brosif, like, sitting behind you saying, yeah, she's free now.
Oh my god!
Oh my god!
That's bad.
Did you not crack up like started laughing? Really?
No, I tried like glaring, but it didn't work because he wasn't paying any attention to me. You know, he was trying to impress his girlfriend. It was terrible.
You should have asked the girlfriend in front of him, are you impressed by his knowledge?
Yeah, his film knowledge, his ability to murder a metaphor.
So, Drive, I think Drive is directed by Nicholas Winding Refn, written by Hussein Omani. I don't know who that person is, but I've heard, and it's adapted from a book by James Salas. Have you read that book, Kara? Maybe you've heard of that book? I'd never.
No. Okay. No, I'd never heard of it.
Okay.
And what else has this director done, which maybe I should have looked up?
Well, he's... So, actually, are we in review mode now? Are we like
are, we
talking
are.
And being recorded? Okay. Yeah. So he's done, I think, the three films that I was aware of, I think, first were, there's a trilogy called The Pusher, which is about a drug dealer in Denmark. And then the other one, which I saw a couple of years ago, was called Bronson, about a violent, psychotic prisoner in the UK, and that was played by Tom Hardy, who's all over the place right now.
Both of those sound excellent, and maybe I'll watch them.
And
he's to my
also
list.
He's yeah, you should. Your burgeoning list. and then he also did another film that I can't quite remember, unfortunately. But
Valhalla Rising.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I think my brother saw that one.
I think Bronson is the one. For me, I haven't seen the Pusher trilogy. I heard tons of great things about it. But I find it hard to get my hands on the full trilogy. So it hasn't been released in a good package or anything like that. But Bronson was amazing. And it's one of those Lost You podcast episodes which we recorded and then we had to discard because the audio quality was so bad. But Bronson was pretty amazing. So I think... Definitely, if you want to check out more of Nicholas Winding Refn's work, that's the movie I would watch after Drive. So, Drive stars Ryan Gosling, Carey Mulligan, Bryan Cranston, and who else? Albert Brooks is in there, and awesome Christina Hendricks, obviously. End of September in the UK. It had great reviews. I think even it won something at Cannes. I think Best Director for Nicholas Winding Refn, I think.
Yes, he did get Best Director.
Yeah. So, I mean, it had a huge critical buzz behind it. So, Marty, that usually means that you're going to like a movie. So, what did you think about Drive?
Well, I'll start off by saying that it's almost a complete fluke that I came to see this because there were, a friend of yours and of you podcasting, Dhiraj, he had ticket, couldn't go. You couldn't go. So I went, and I knew absolutely nothing about it. I had even forgotten that it was a Nicholas Winding Refn film and had no idea that he was the guy that directed Bronson and The Pusher and la-la-la. And consequently, I had a complete blank slate. I mean, I hadn't even seen the trailer. I hadn't read anything in the press about it. I had no clue that he won the Best Director award at Cannes. I hadn't even heard of Ryan Gosling.
See, that's what I mean with Marty being a newborn baby, you know?
That's actually really funny.
So for me, I just sort of went in. I was just kicking back in my seat, thinking, oh, okay, he's a director's introduced the film, and he said some good things, like films should basically be not much longer than 90 minutes and have violence in them. I was thinking, that sounds good. Director's got a good little sort of mentality going there. And then the film starts, and you've got this sort of huge, big sort of like panning shot over LA at night, and you've got the big sort of pink scrawled letters come over the screen. The film is excellent. It's really, really a good film. I did refer to it as it's a truly original film, and that's not strictly true. I mean, there are other films that have guns and have cars and are violent, and there's a love story and, you know, involving the mafia and, you know, whatever. But I've really not seen anything quite like this, or I've never seen anything that's been done in such and such a way. And I just thought the movie looks brilliant, looks absolutely class. It's the way that light is used in situations, and the way that the story, I guess the film is sort of in, I felt the film was firmly in two parts. So you have sort of like the unfolding of the love story, and then in part two you sort of have like the unfolding of the criminality and everything sort of like kicking off. I just thought it was brilliant, really. Not really a particularly boring scene in it, as far as I was concerned. I think there's been a lot talked about it, and I've read a few things online about, you know, why people think it's good and why people think it sucks and why it's this and why it's that, and why is Ryan Gosling doing this and why is the director doing that and la 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 la. But I honestly just stuff all that. I just think it's really good. And if I had one thing to sort of like take away from the film itself that I would sort of like carry with me, I think it would be the soundtrack, which is pretty constant throughout the movie, and it reminded me of the Scarface soundtrack. Yeah. A lot.
The Warriors. It made me think of The Warriors too. I don't know if you remember that movie.
Is that the one in New York?
Yeah.
The gangs.
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't remember the soundtrack for that, but I think the art of a good soundtrack is when I think about the songs individually, I don't. You know, I was talking to somebody in the office about this. I don't think there's actually individually really a song on or in the soundtrack that I would like to own.
Right.
But I would love to have, I mean, I will get it. But I would love to have the soundtrack as a whole.
Yeah.
Which is really, really sort of contradictory thing to say. But I have very much the same thoughts about the Scarface soundtrack. But that has a couple of particular highlights, but generally I think when something is good as a whole but you don't necessarily like it in individual sort of tracks or whatever, then I think that's the mark of a belting soundtrack, because there's not really it's not like a composed score for the film. It's, you know, it's individual pieces of electro pop synth.
Yeah,
really?
It's composed by Cliff Martinez, it has very much of that 80s synthesizer pop kind of sound, and that's why I was mentioning The Warriors in a way.
Yeah, it actually reminded me a lot of you know, the band Air, and they did the soundtrack for the Virgin Suicides.
Yes. Mm.
It had that kind of feel for me.
Yeah, it did. And I think it's almost like the soundtrack is almost a character in the movie itself. Especially in the intro scene where you see him in his bedroom and he kind of switches off the light and the beat drops at the same... There's this moment where it's just like awesomely timed. Although there was one track that I didn't really like, A Real Hero. I don't know if... You know, he's a real hero and a real human being or something like that. That one was a bit annoying, but...
That didn't bother. There was a couple places for me where the soundtrack was too loud. Like what was happening on screen couldn't support the music, and that was mostly in anything that had to do with the romance-y scenes, which I thought none of those worked terribly well.
None of them?
No.
Oh, okay. So, well,
forgive me. Carey Mulligan was the wrong choice for that role.
Oh, really? Oh, I kind of liked her in it. But what did you generally think of Drive, actually?
Generally, I thought it was quite good. I love all the stuff with, well, the driving and L.A. and the direction was beautiful. Just really, really beautiful. I loved just anything like those... I don't know, just like the scenes in the garage, and it would just like pan along all the cars and just like those very elegant, very classy shots of things that normally are just like detritus in our visual field. Do you know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah.
Yeah, it was like a love letter to cars and to LA.
LA at
and
night, yeah.
Yeah, just a glittering nightscape was just beautiful.
Yeah. It was beautifully shot, and it had I thought it had some great performances in it too.
It did. I liked the performances from everybody except Carey Mulligan, who was just like this blank slate to me. But everyone else was really, really good. Albert Brooks was a very welcome surprise. I actually didn't know he was going to be in it. Ryan Gosling was amazing. Christina Hendricks in her role was really good. All the gangsters and the background characters, and yeah,
Ron Perlman.
Yeah, of course,
awesome.
Yeah, and even the little kid was good.
Yeah, he wasn't annoying.
Literally, yeah, he wasn't annoying at all, which is very rare for child actors.
His dad was good as well, Oscar Isaac.
He was really good in it. Yeah,
he was good too. Just very like, I don't know, businesslike. Yeah, he was good.
And you kind of also expect, you know, the story of, you know, like the convict coming back, and he kind of sees this relationship that's built up with his wife and the next door neighbor, and you think something will happen, but it kind of, you know, like doesn't go the conventional route, and it kind of just still surprises you. Although it's a template of a movie we've seen so many times, you know, the silent driver that is kind of in love and all that. You know, Transporter 2 was very close to this in a way, you know, like that chemistry with a married woman and this silent driver that, you know, it's a story that has come back before, but they kind of hit the beats a bit differently, and it's really good in doing that. And yeah, it's beautifully shot. The soundtrack is really good. I really did enjoy Drive a lot, especially the first 10 minutes, that first chase scene you see.
The first scene is really important, I think, actually. And I think it's really it's excellent, actually, because I mean you have a very good sort of complement between like the soundtrack is almost like his heart beating.
Yeah.
As things are sort of getting going and he's getting underway, and you see the preparation, and he's sort of like, "You get me for 5 minutes, nothing more, nothing less. You can't ever contact me on this phone again." He throws the phone away, leaves it on the bed, walks out. He's sort of like, you know, that he's drilled, and he's just sort of like professional in his activity. And you see him not buckling under pressure. You don't really see any signs of him sort of like losing his cool. Whereas I think later on in the film, when he's sort of like trying to figure out a way out of the mess, you can see him start to sort of like sweat more, and his hands and arms are starting to tremble a little bit later on.
And his outfit gets less neat and pristine as the movie goes on.
Yeah, but he keeps wearing that jacket everywhere he goes, even though it's bloodied as hell. But it's a cool jacket. I think we all want it now.
Yes.
But I think, I mean, that's kind of what's so cool about it, because as a, I mean, he doesn't even get a name, Ryan Gosling's character in the movie. You know, he's just the driver. And you don't get to know much about him, but that one scene really establishes him, what the character is, you know, and even the moments that he's not talking, because there's a lot of not talking going on in this movie, right?
Which he does well, but again, Carey Mulligan really did not sell any of that to me.
I think it's also the way it's shot. I think it's just Ryan Gosling not acting like he's not talking, you know what I mean?
He just seems so natural.
Yeah, I think a lot of the ambiguity is on him, you know, to kind of drive that scene forward. And I think Carey Mulligan is kind of sidelined in a role that is, you know, it's not a very, I don't know if it's such an exciting role to play even. But
I don't know, like I feel like the script maybe let us down a little bit with that character, but I feel like she was just the wrong choice. Like she was just too schoolgirlish with her little barrettes and working as a waitress. I don't
should
know.
I
feel like
I was just gonna say I described her as a wet blanket to somebody.
Yeah, that is an appropriate description. But I feel like a more appropriate actress could have done more with that, maybe been a little warmer, just to contrast against him. Excuse me.
I can understand. Maybe it's just my fondness for Carey Mulligan that kind of gives them more scope.
But that was really the only thing that I didn't like about the movie, was just her. And she was, you know, genuinely a small part of it.
Yeah. And I think same with Christina Hendricks. It was a very small part, but I was just happy to see her on screen.
Yeah, but I feel like that's the thing with, like, casting an appropriate actress, because she was very memorable, I thought. Like, and I liked seeing her on screen, but I just feel like, not to harp on this, but, yeah, like, well, wasn't it you that was saying the original role was supposed to be for a Latina actress?
It wasn't me, but that's interesting. Is it?
It might have been Danny.
Oh, right.
Yeah, he was saying that the original role was supposed to be for a Latina actress, which would have made a lot more sense.
Right.
And, maybe have given that romance aspect a different vibe, because you can kind of understand why he falls for her, like, she has a son, like, it's sort of some human contact, which maybe he's not used to. But for, like, her, you're like, why? I don't know. It's just kind of, you never really understand. At least I didn't.
So are you talking about Carey Mulligan being a Latina actress? Or,
No, she's not a Latina actress, but the original role was for a Latina actress.
Oh, right. I thought you were talking about Christina Hendricks.
No, Christina Hendricks was just awesome.
Right, yeah, she was.
She was awesome until you know what happened.
And
it
her
was a very, very minor role in the film, wasn't it?
But see, that's what I'm saying. She was very memorable, whereas Carey Mulligan, I don't know, she just was like smoke on screen. There was nothing there.
Yeah. But you're saying you didn't know why she would fall for Ryan Gosling? Is that really what you're saying? Because I think even men are falling for Ryan Gosling in this movie.
Well, no, but I mean, that's like as his cool on-screen avatar. But like in the context of the movie, he like does some pretty terrible stuff right in front of her.
Yeah.
And I mean, really, would you go and be, I don't know, like, that's just kind of, it didn't, like, that didn't make any sense, especially when she's so meek.
Yeah. Although I think that I kind of loved that elevator scene that they had together.
I liked it too.
Because, you know, at that moment he's kind of saying goodbye to her, you know? He knows that she's never going to see him again in the same light that she has until now, because he's going to do something horrible. But what else can he do, you know? It's the only thing he could do to kind of save her at that time, I think. Because the guy in the elevator knew who they were, but Carey Mulligan was the only one that didn't know what was going on.
Right, but he could have done, like, he didn't have to do that.
What else? I mean, I don't know. Like, the guy was ready to...
Yeah, but he could have, like, incapacitated him without, like, literally kicking his head.
Obliterating his throat.
Yeah, and, like, leaving a bloody pulp. Like, he didn't have to do. Like, he could have knocked him out, you know.
Yeah, no,
but that's not the director's style. I think a lot of it
which is
comes
I'm
down
very grateful for, because that was a very enjoyable scene to watch. But like, I'm just saying, like, if she was a real person, like, there's no way you would watch something like that, see somebody you know do something like that, and then still want to have, like, romance-y scenes with them later.
But they didn't anymore. I don't think they saw each other even after that. That was the last scene that they were together.
There was a phone call, though, right?
Yeah, but the whole part is kind of that's at the ending, right? That's very ambiguous. You don't know anymore. We can talk about that a little bit later, but you kind of wonder what happened, you know? Like, did he drive off, or is that a dream, or is that the afterlife? It could be so many things. I don't know. Did he survive, or did he not survive? You know, it's kind of left in the open, I think. Ryan Gosling's character, at least. I don't know. I just want to kind of talk about one thing. We all love this movie. It won Best Director. How much has it on Rotten Tomatoes? 9.93 or something like that. Really high score.
Which is ridiculous, but anyway.
Yeah, but this movie only made $30 million, which I'm following Twitter now. Real Steel has made $37 million. In one weekend. Why is that? Why is it that a movie like this, people just get... And a lot of it is what you were talking about, your experience, Marty, in the watching it at the BFI and then watching it at a normal theater. Is it really the violence that turns people off, or is it the slow pace? Kyra?
I think it's the slow pace. Oh, it has to be, because, you know, there was that story, I don't know if you read Danny's blog, but he just posted something about, like, some woman suing because she thought Drive was going to be, like, Fast Five, and it wasn't, and she was really mad about it.
Who is she suing?
I don't know. She's suing somebody.
Somebody's getting sued.
Somebody's getting sued because Drive was not, like, Fast Five, and she thought it was going to be. But I think it's a slow pace, and it might be the violence. Americans, we like our violence more cartoony, less realistic.
For me, I thought it was very European in terms of how it felt. It didn't feel at all like an American film, even, you know, an independent American film. And I think maybe people, they weren't quite expecting it to be along those lines. So I also felt in some respects this film was a little bit connected to The American.
Yeah.
The George Clooney film.
Yeah, I totally agree with you.
There was a certain way in which it's paced, and you didn't have these kinds of I can't really explain what I'm trying to say, but
no, that makes sense though. It did feel very
European.
What
I mean?
Yeah, I think if you've seen The American, you can definitely see the connection with it.
And I think the other thing to do with the violence, I'm not sure. I mean, I get a little bit. I mean, personally, I didn't have a problem with the violence in this film. And it's not even a violent film, for goodness sake. There are there are some very violent things that take place, and there's some hugely violent sort of episodes in the film. But I don't think that the violence is gratuitous. Okay, you might have me there on the elevator scene, but I mean...
But I think that was the point of the elevator scene. Like, I don't think it was gratuitous for gratuitous sake. Like, I think the character... Like, I think it was for the character's sake.
Yeah.
The violence thing, I mean, if somebody has a problem with the violence, then I'd love to know what other kinds of films they either watch or don't watch.
But I think the violence for, like, American audiences is probably, it's not, like, we're used to gunshots and, like, what happened to Christina Hendricks' character, like, that, I think, is more like what American audiences are used to, and just, like, the knives, you know, and just how personal, and the blood, and just, it's very, I don't know, it just feels more visceral. Like with the with a gun, there's like a remove there. Like you can, I don't know, like there's a distance between the person doing the violence and the person getting shot. But with a knife, you're right up close. And I feel like maybe that has something to do with it. Like it's a different kind of violence. It's not, you know, the gangster waving his gun around and like acting all cool. Like it's more personal.
Because, I mean, I'm looking here at the on Box Office Mojo at the numbers that it made, you know, and it wasn't even a big success in outside of the States, money-wise, you know. I mean, it's made, like, twice its budget back, so that's not a problem. We're not talking about you know, it being a financial failure or anything like that. But this has, it's awesomely shot, has a great soundtrack, it has a star that's, you know, has the kind of capabilities to drive box office. It comes from a critically acclaimed director, but it hasn't really, you know, set the box office on fire. It hasn't, I mean, is it going to be a classic in 10 years? I don't know. So why is it, you know, why is it such a disconnect between something like Real Steel, which is just a horrible, horrible movie, and it's just getting a pass? It's really annoying me.
Or like The Smurfs, which is made like... how many hundreds of millions of dollars?
Hundreds and millions of dollars when a good movie is out there for people and everybody is telling you it's a good movie. Why are people just not going or not being interested in Drive? It's just it's a mystery to me. And I read that article on Salon.com, which I forwarded to you, Marty. And,
I watched that, yeah.
Yeah, so...
I read it, sorry, yeah.
Again, a lot of it was about the violence, but which, again, I mean, the stomping scene in the elevator really made me think of Irreversible. I don't know if you guys have seen that scene in... Nicholas Winding Refn actually spoke with Gaspar Noé about how he bashed the skull in that movie, so he needed to do it in the same similar manner. Maybe it's just that people are disappointed that there's not enough car driving in it, but I think that first...
I think that's it.
Really?
I think there's a disconnect between it's a film called Drive and there's not enough driving in it.
Yeah. But that first 15 minutes is so cool that anybody who sees it must be like, oh my god, this is probably going to be one of those scenes that you always remember, no? I mean, that first chase scene is pretty awesome, I would say.
Well, maybe just the audience for a film like this just isn't that big. You know, it's not a crowd pleaser. It's not something you can take your kids to. And it is slow moving, so if you wanted to see something fun, you're not going to go see this. I don't know. Maybe it's the audience just isn't that big for a film like this, no matter how critically acclaimed it is.
Yeah, which is a shame. Marty, you were saying something?
I mean, my hope is that this film will... I'm trying to think of a good comparison now. But my hope for this film is that, you know, we get all the sort of like the fuss out of the way now, and it's had its mainstream release and all the rest of it. And what I hope is that it's one of those films that just gathers up a pace of steam, gathers up a head of steam as the years go by, and it's something that people will feel more comfortable going back to, and it will just sort of grow a little bit, you know, from there.
Yeah, and this is what things like the Oscars are good for, because if this gets nominated after some, you know, and then after a few months and is re-released, maybe people will have a different impression of it.
Right. Yeah. I hope so. I think it's a really good movie, and I think it's a shame that people haven't given it, you know, its proper due in a way.
Well, come on, there's Hugh Jackman and some boxing robots that really need to be watched, right?
Yeah, Justin Bieber lookalike kid, which even Roger Ebert loved. And I was like, what the hell is going on, man? It just kind of always illustrates my disconnect with general audiences, you know?
But I mean, Drive, when my parents get back from holiday, I'm going to recommend they go and see it.
Yeah.
And my mum will hate me because she'll come out and say, oh, that was really violent. But then my mum is kind of like 61, so...
No, my mom hates violence. There's no way. Well, my dad might enjoy that movie, but...
I think my parents would like it, actually.
I think if you've, like, grown up on 70s, 80s kind of movies, you know, like even the Steve McQueen ones and stuff like that, you know, I think you kind of might be more adapted to the pace. I think you could really like... I mean, I want to get it on Blu-ray when it's out, because I think... even in seeing it in high quality is going in high definition is going to be worthwhile, and the soundtrack and stuff like that. I really like that movie. I think it's even worthy of a buy, not even just a rental or anything like that. I think it's that good.
Yeah. Oh no, it's a buy, not a rent, for sure.
Yeah, well, and I didn't read the article on Salon, but were they saying things about the pace of it too? Just that it was too slow?
I think most of it was about the
violence
and the expectation of having a car movie like Fast.
Yeah.
I think you say car movie, you think Fast Five, you know?
Yeah.
But this was definitely not that.
Because I mean, I do think that the slow pace, I really liked it. But then I like when shots, like the cuts aren't too quick. I like leisurely tracking shots of glittery Los Angeles. Like, I like that kind of stuff. But, I mean, I'm definitely in the minority, I think, of mainstream viewers when it comes to that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the same kind of view I have. I mean, it's why I like watching old movies, because...
me too.
You know, this is sort of like a slower pace, and you don't need to be sort of like force-fed a shot every sort of like 10 seconds. Bang, 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 bang. So I found that to be very interesting. But I just... yeah, I don't know. I know that certainly in terms of the... The driving and a little bit about the expectation perhaps of high sort of octane car chases and things like that. I know that having been to a Q&A with the director after the film, he was saying that the car chases that you see in sort of like Fast Five and, you know, myriad other mainstream films, that they are so complicated, apparently, to set up and film, and because of that, they become hugely, hugely costly, as well. And they just didn't have the time and the budget to do it. And so they, when you do see the car scenes in Drive, they're actually very realistic, because there's nothing overly spectacular that happens with any of the cars involved in any of the chasing. I don't know if you...
There's no chase scenes at whatever... I mean, there's the first one, but there's, after that...
That's the first one isn't really a chase. I mean, he evades,
evades like a couple of police cars. It's like a cat and mouse.
Yeah, exactly. And then I think there is that... Obviously, the scene when they're driving away from... the pawn shop has just been... done over. That's pretty much the only like aggressive car side by car, you know, on the open road, and there's bits and pieces and bumper smashing and stuff. But that's like the only real scene that would look at home in a Fast Five type.
Yeah,
film.
But see, maybe this is where just me, as I don't drive all that often. I drive maybe once a week, maybe. Usually to the Bollywood theater, but the there are the scenes of just him driving, which I actually really enjoyed, of just being like the car just on the streets with, I mean, sometimes the soundtrack, and I really enjoyed those because it felt like you were a passenger in his car as he was driving around LA. And for me, and maybe people that drive all the time, like, they see that all the time, like they don't really care about being a passenger in the car because it's just part of their life. But if you're kind of a tourist in his LA world, where you're like sort of glued to your car, I mean, maybe there's that sort of element of novelty or just being able to look at it with fresh eyes that mass audiences, especially people that drive all the time, just can't connect with.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, because I think I drive less often than you. In terms of a car, I think I drive less than once a year.
But then again, the thing is, even Nicholas Winding Refn, he doesn't even have a driving license. He doesn't drive.
Yeah, so that's. Yeah. I mean, I feel like maybe that was it. So it's like I'm picking up on the novelty of just being in a car, like driving around LA, and maybe other people just don't, like, to them that's not, like, they can't take a step back and look at it as an artistic experience or just as a visually pleasing experience because it's so mundane.
But I think the other reason might just also be is just the ending of the movie that people didn't connect with. Because now we can talk a bit about the ending. What did you think happens? I mean, for a lot of people, it's just so open ended that you. I think a lot of open ended movies aren't really successful because people need to have a clear idea about what happened. You know, what happened with these characters that we've been following for 2 hours that we started caring about, and if you don't have a definitive answer, a lot of people just get turned off by it.
See, I like open ended endings, and that's one thing in a lot of Japanese cinema and just stories in general. There's a lot of open endings, so that didn't even occur to me that that would have been an issue. Like, I don't know, I liked it.
What about you, Marty?
No, I don't have a problem with the ending at all. I mean, I would just say you either think literally everybody's dead, or you think everybody's dead apart from Carey Mulligan and maybe Ryan Gosling.
Yeah,
but I don't think Ryan Gosling died in that film. Or, sorry, his character. I don't think.
Died.
Rumors of my death are premature. No, I don't think his character died. But would it make any difference to me if it had been made explicit that his character died? Maybe it would have made me a little bit more sad, but wouldn't have made me give it sort of like, oh, now that he's died, it's a 4 out of 10 instead of a 7 out of 10.
Because I think, like, even people that, we have a friend who's very much into, like, Transformers and this kind of thing, and he was telling me he was going to go watch Drive, and I said, dude, you're not going to like it, you're not going to enjoy it. But he came back to me and he said that he did enjoy it, but he was probably doing other stuff while he was watching the movie. So maybe that's the way people with ADD need to watch it, you know, do half some other stuff, and then whenever the scenes are slow, you just kind of get back to it and get the general storyline or something like that.
Oh my word.
That's when you're browsing on YouTube or whatever. Yeah. That's when it's slow, all those driving scenes.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. But yeah, it's a shame. It's a shame that a movie like this, which is well made, has great stars in it, doesn't do well. But that's the story of Drive, I guess. Any final thoughts, Marty?
I'm obviously praiseworthy about this. Brilliant film.
Cool.
It's just a brilliant film. So if you haven't seen it, go and see it. Great.
Kara?
I look forward to checking out the other things that the director did.
Bronson, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bronson, good. Bronson, very good.
And it also has a bit of violence, hardcore violence in it, so...
That sounds right up my alley.
But I don't know if you knew this, Kara, but Nicholas Rafn has described violence as being like fucking.
So, oh, okay.
Yeah. And he actually said violence is like fucking on breakfast TV in this country. And
you would not get away with that in America at all.
The two presenters were just sort of, oh dear, he said that. Yeah, can you not say that again, please?
Yeah, they were so polite about it too, you know. Oh, we don't say that here.
Anyway,
it's on YouTube, actually.
It is, yeah. If you type in Rafn plus swearing, it'll come up.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. I think it's definitely a worth watch. I think you shouldn't. It's probably not the kind of popcorn movie that you need to go in a bunch of guys and like watch it. Yeah, like yeah, fuck yeah, driving yeah, that kind of movie. But. You know, like Kara, when we had you on for the Fast and Furious episode.
Oh yeah.
You were saying that afterwards you came out and people were like driving with their cars.
Oh
and,
like, yeah. Those like people, super fast.
Those people don't need to watch Drive. I don't think they would enjoy it, but I think everybody else should really, you know, everybody who appreciates like 70s, 80s movies a bit, it really has that classical touch to it. I think you should check it out, and I think people in in Europe, where it hasn't been that much heavily marketed, I think, as it has in the States. I think the marketing was a lot more heavy there. I think people should still seek it out and check it out, or at least when it comes out on DVD or Blu-ray, check it out. Or even get the soundtrack, even. I think it's definitely worthwhile. Okay, cool. So that was our review of Drive. That was part one. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'll post another file for part two where we talk only about Bollywood. So if you enjoyed this show or the next show, drop us a line on newpodcasting@gmail.com. That's the new address. I've been giving out wrong addresses for the last 10 episodes, I think. So it's newpodcasting@gmail.com. And as always, if you can drop us an email or a review on iTunes, we would really appreciate it. Hang on for part two of episode 39 about Bollywood. It's going to be on our next post, and I hope you guys enjoyed the show.
I'm giving you a night call to tell you how I feel. I want to drive you through the night, down the hills. I gotta tell you something you don't want to hear. I'm gonna show you where it's dark, but have no fear.